And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
It's a new day. Yes, it is.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome
to Wild and Crazy Nights.
The Athletic presents Hogan Johns.
Hogan for the win.
We're in a
We're going to consistently put players in position to succeed. The most important piece is we're going to take the North and never give it back.
From CHGO, it's Adam Hogan.
I don't think that this is a full rebuild, but you definitely have to retool your roster.
And from The Athletic, it's Adam Johns.
Hey, what's up, Flus?
And we're going to have measurable ways for standards of performance every single rep, every single game.
Anyway, who cares?
Now, here they are, the Adams. Hogan Johns.
What's up? Welcome in. Adam Johns here from Hogan Johns. Our good friend Adam Hogan is still he's up in Minnesota, so we want to send our thoughts and prayers to him as he deals with his family matter. Please, we're all thinking of him right now. You can follow him at Adam Hogue. Read his stuff, allchgo.com. I know you already are if you're a diehard. I'm Adam Johns. You can read me on theathletic.com. I got a story up about Caleb Williams there, where we sort of go back in time. So if you want to read about how he converted a third and 33 with a broken foot in a championship game against a rival, I have that story for you on theathletic.com. So we'll call this an Adam Johns special. So this is going to be a special guest episode. We have Bruce Feldman, the one and only Bruce Feldman, our college football reporter from The Athletic. I know you've seen him on Fox. He will be joining me. And then we have friend of the show, Scott Docterman, who covers Iowa and college football for The Athletic. He will be joining as well. And he's a Bears fan. So I think he's feeling some of the same feelings that many Bears fans have right now about the Chicago Bears draft. Caleb Williams is now a Chicago Bear. His number is 18. Roma Dunze is now a Chicago Bear. He will wear number 15. It is a new era of football for the Chicago Bears, and I think Bruce and Scott will give you some awesome insight into what's next for the Chicago Bears. So let's get going. My first guest is Bruce Feldman. Let's bring him in. All right, let's bring in Bruce Feldman. You can follow him on X at Bruce Feldman CFB. He's a college reporter, one of the best college reporters that we have here at the Athletic. You can see him on Fox. He's been doing this for a long time. Bruce, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Adam.
Let's start with this. You called Roma Dunze your favorite value pick in round one. Why is that?
There's a bunch of reasons. So I'm going to start with this. He's the guy that coaches and people who have been around him and faced him. They talk about his ability to track the football. It's as good as anybody in this draft. It's probably as good as anybody's in the last few years. He's a big physical kid who is really competitive. And I think the competitiveness may separate him from almost anybody else at the position. I think Marvin Harrison Jr. is really smooth and really polished. I don't think either guy has quite the top end speed that Malik Nabers has. I don't think either guy is as explosive with the ball in his hands as Nabers. But I think, you know, there in terms of what everybody wants to coach, what everybody wants to be around, I think you have a guy in Rome. Everybody who comes around him just raves about him and his ability to track the ball, his ability to make catches in tight spaces, ability to make big plays. I mean, he's good at everything. He's just great at those things. And I'd be very surprised if he does not have a terrific career in the NFL.
Were you surprised that he was there at number 9 for the Bears?
A little. 9? I thought he might be gone. But there was, you know, there's a few things that were a little surprising. There was, to me, there was three receivers at the top of this draft that were much better than what we've seen in the last few years, probably since Ja'Marr Chase came out in the NFL. Certainly last year, Jackson Smith and Jigba goes 20. All three of these guys are far more complete prospects than him. You had a bunch of quarterbacks, though, that were going to, you know, clog it up to some extent. And I thought Joe Ault, who the Chargers took, is clearly the best offensive lineman in this group. And I think he was worthy of a top 10 pick. Then it just came to fit, you know, and obviously with the Falcons, it was kind of a wild card, but it's a huge win. The other thing that surprised me a little bit, but I don't think there was anything else that would probably help them much more, is if you're the Bears and you want Caleb to have as much firepower as possible, you already have two terrific receivers in Keenan Allen. You added a, you know, phenomenal route runner who's big and physical and has played a lot. You have obviously DJ who is very dynamic. And now you're going to add somebody who brings in even more juice to that receiver room. I mean, they're giving Caleb a lot of weapons on top of, you know, Cole Kmet and DeAndre Swift. And for that to get it, you know, towards the end of the top 10, that's a heck of a pick for me.
I always love your draft confidentials that you do every single year, where you just get so many great opinions. And I went back to the section on the receivers today. Why do you think he was viewed as like a safer pick, Rome Odunze, maybe, as opposed to the other receivers? Like, I just got that. I know some of them use that description, but maybe take us behind the scenes a little bit.
You know, one of the coaches I talked to who had been an offense coordinator in the NFL for a little while really liked Neighbors. But there was one part was like, yeah, there's some stuff. You got to remind him we're all in this together. And there's a fire there that is mostly good, but I think maybe a little bit of a caution. Because at one point I was like, you know, because things went sideways, obviously, in Buffalo with Stephon Diggs. I was like, do you think it's like that? And he was like, I think so. I think it could be like that. And, you know, with Rome, you just hear the complete opposite. This is not a knock on Diggs. I don't want it to come a totally like that. But I just think that there is no negatives on Rome. There's nothing like even a hint of it. And so I think safe in that case is a really good way, where you're talking about somebody who has the receiving skills that he has. And it's not like he's like 6 feet, 195. Like, he's a big receiver. He was a track guy in high school. He's very mature. He played in a high-level college offense. You know, he played a lot of games. I think he saw a program that went from really bad at 4-8 to playing for the national title game in 2 years. And obviously, Kalen DeBoer and Michael Penix Jr. were the two new adds to that. But I think it speaks to him, because I know Rome was one of the leaders of the team that got that turned around and got that program out of the ditch. So I think it's safe, and safe shouldn't make it like, oh, he's like this, you know, guy without any wow factor. He tracks the ball at an elite level. He makes contact. Like, you know, I threw this out a few days ago. It's like one of the guys who I thought was just a money clutch receiver who's played in the NFL, you know, a little while back, but for a long time, was Anquan Boldin. Was just really physical. Rome has some of that, except I think Rome has more top end. He's a little more explosive. And, you know, you're going to get big plays down the field, I think. And with Caleb and his ability to extend plays, it's going to be pick your poison how teams are going to try to cover these guys.
Can I stay with Washington just for a second? Because, like, the Bears were absolutely shocked at, like, what the Atlanta Falcons did with Michael Penix. And there was some fear there that maybe a team would jump them and take Rome Odunze. So, like, for someone who's been doing this so long, like, what was your level of shock? Like, what do you make of what the Falcons did at quarterback?
So, it's like two sides of it. The first side is, I am not at all surprised Michael Penix Jr. is a top 10 pick. I thought, to me, and to the coaches I've spoken to a lot in this process, he wasn't the most polarizing quarterback in the draft. Drake May was. Drake May can throw the heck out of it, but really sloppy footwork. There was a lot of stuff people were like, okay, I'm not sure I like his pocket presence. It was, you know, things people like, but like, okay, there's definitely some buyer beware. Penix, and I've talked to coaches who faced both Penix and Caleb, and they faced him more than one time. And they're like, Caleb's got a really good arm. It ain't Michael Penix Jr. arm talent. Like, they rave about Penix. But he did have four season-ending injuries. Now, he was healthy for the last couple of years. Like, I love that he had real adversity and he came through the other side in great fashion. So on that side, yes, he's a yes top 10 pick. It's the Falcons part that doesn't add up to me. You just spent a fortune on Kirk Cousins. You have real need on the defensive side of the ball. Now, whether they thought Dallas Turner was the guy to jump for, there was no Lawrence Taylor in this draft. Next year will probably be a much better defensive draft. This wasn't a good one, but it's still really puzzling to me because it's all the odd reasons. Like, Michael's going to be 24 soon, and if you're not playing him for 2 years, he's going to be 26. It's not like he's the guy where I would certainly say this for Drake May, but if you wait on, give him a year or two behind somebody, I think that's really good for Drake May. I'm not sure if it's going to help Michael that much. It actually may work against him.
The Bears put so much time into getting to know Caleb Williams, from watching him interact at a dinner with his teammates, with his friends, to the first one-on-one interaction with Matt Eberflus being on the campus of USC, to having him have dinner with DJ Moore, TJ Edwards, and Cole Kmet here in Lake Forest, Illinois. As you're gathering information on Caleb Williams, like, what struck you, what didn't you like, what were some general themes? Like, you had so much in that draft confidential. I'm sure you even had more. Like, what were some of the things? Like, what are your biggest takeaways on what you gathered on Caleb Williams?
So he's been in the spotlight for a long time for being a college quarterback who spent 3 years in college. You know, he came up through the QB collective part where he was kind of around. He was around a bunch of NFL coaches. He was kind of anointed by a lot of folks. He did well when he overtook Spencer Rattler at OU. But then he got to USC, and the timing was interesting in that he's really the first college football player who was the star in the NIL era. Now, there's been stars. I mean, Johnny Manziel was a rocket ship, and you had a bunch of these other guys, Leinart, certainly when he was with Reggie Bush out in LA. But he was in the NIL space and he was a transfer guy. And it was also, he took over a program that was in disarray. Remember, it was an abyss after they fired Clay Helton. It was rudderless. And Lincoln Riley was trying to establish a culture. So I'm setting that up to all say this. It's like, he went in there. I think Caleb is intelligent. I think he's got a lot of stuff to like. I think there's some other stuff where you're like, okay, we'll see how this plays out, because it's not surprising to me that he's making good first impressions. I think the challenge for him and for the Bears, to be honest, to insulate him, and I did this story with Kevin, you know, a couple of days before the draft, on just the ecosystem around him. Love the receivers, love the talent they're putting around him. You know, not sure what to make of what the quarterback room is going to be like. You know, you don't have a guy in there with him that's been there, done that, and had the pressure of being a franchise guy. That's not it, right? So, you know, at USC, it felt like he was bigger than USC when he was there. I'm not saying he thought he was bigger than USC, but it absolutely took on that vibe. You know, Caleb's gifting beats, you know, for the rest of the team, and Caleb's doing this, and all that stuff can be good, but it also took on a tone of like, it was Caleb and the rest of USC. And I don't think that was necessarily a Caleb's fault, but I think, you know, that team was a mess this year, you know, and I feel like right now with, you know, in going to year three, Lincoln Riley's having something of a reset, you know, it's like starting over. And I don't, you know, like, I had done a radio show in Chicago like the day after the draft. And they talked about, like, you know, Caleb's done this and everybody was excited. And I was like, I don't want to rain on anybody's parade. It's, you know, I think it'll work well. I mean, they've surrounded him with great receivers and skill guys, but it's like, this is going to be a grind. And, you know, it's like that USC team felt a lot like an AAU basketball team that was very disconnected. It didn't feel like a cohesive.
A lot of transfers, right?
Yeah, but Florida State had a lot of transfers.
Yeah.
A lot of teams now have a lot of transfers. Clemson doesn't, but, like, you know, like, Florida State was undefeated with a ton of transfers. Everywhere you look, quarterback, the three best receivers, the running back, the two best defensive players, you know, they were all transfers. This was different. They were a 7-5 team. You know, they were not that good. Now the defense wasn't very good in the offensive line, you know, like, but I, you know, you just wonder about that. How will this kind of take hold in terms of like, okay, it's all about winning games. It's all about winning games, not trying. Like, go back to this line, an NFL scout had said to me, it's like, it feels like he's trying to hit the 5-run home run every time. And the coaches I talk to, and there's one specific who I put a lot of stock in because I know what he, you know, I know the things he said in years past and how some of those guys have turned out, most notably CJ Stroud. And he was like, you know, if Caleb can learn to play on time and read defenses better and go, you know, like there was about 3 or 4 things. It's not to say he can't do it, but it was like these were not things he was not that good at, you know, in college. And there were other guys that he faced who were better at that. And again, that could be for all sorts of reasons. He's only been in college 3 years. It's not like he was playing for 5 years. But those are the things that are going to be interesting to see what happens when the adversity comes. And, you know, again, one of the NFL quarterback coaches made a line to me. He said, he's like, you know, there's a lot of wow stuff in there. And some of the stuff is like, great, he can do that. But it was like, you can't do that when you're being rushed by Myles Garrett. And there's a lot, there's maybe only one Myles Garrett, but there's a lot of dudes who are like way better than anything he saw in the Pac-12, you know, or the Big 12 for that matter.
Do you think, just in terms of like the persona, I've talked to a couple of scouts about this, just like Caleb Williams being like the first like NIL superstar. I don't know if you think this is a trend because I'm trying to think of who else could be that person, be that quarterback in the future. Maybe, you know, Archie Manning. I'm not sure. I don't know if you have another name that comes to mind. But
well,
like,
I think Adam, what's different though is it was the circumstance that came with it. Like Bryce Young made a bunch of money outside of Alabama from national ad campaigns because he was a Heisman guy who came back, but he was at Alabama. And what was different was he was A, in Tuscaloosa, B, he was in Nick Saban's program. It was already a running, well-running machine. What's different is when you're in, this is the USC is in the biggest media market there is for college athletics. Like obviously New York's a big media market. There is no college football in New York to speak of. USC has this big, big machine behind it. It's a disconnected machine to some extent, but like there are people just desperately waiting for USC to get going and looking for the buzz, you know, like, you know, whether it's Colin Cowherd trying to jump on anything or, you know, you name it, it's that. And I think, so you had the NIL piece, you had the excitement of Lincoln Riley's trying to get this thing turned around. And in the first year, they did very well. But then the next year, when the aura built bigger, because he was the Heisman winner, because it was his draft year, you know, there was a lot of stuff. I think, you know, these conversations come up. And I know, you know, one of the coaches I talked to who's very connected at USC was like, nobody says anything very negative, but you start kind of decoding some of the things that do get said to you. And you're like, okay, you know, we'll see how this is or whatever. And, you know, I would go back, like probably the last one I would see, quarterback who came out, I'm like, I'd be really surprised if he didn't turn out to be a terrific NFL player, was like Joe Burrow. I would go to that. Like, I thought CJ was going to be very good. I thought CJ was an easier pick than Bryce in part because he's just a bigger guy too. But this group, I'm not like, I don't feel as strong about any one of these five guys. I could see it not going great about any one of the six guys. I'm sorry, Bo Nix, I'll throw it and left you out. But, you know, I could see it not working for sizable reasons.
Did you, from what you gathered, did you see maybe a sizable I'd call it grade difference from Caleb and the other guys? Maybe I'm trying to go off what you said there.
Yeah. You know, Caleb to me has a better arm than Jaden. He's also played less. Jaden, you know, is a couple years further along. Jaden had 2 first round receivers. Caleb had good receivers. Obviously, Caleb had Jordan Addison the year before, who was a first round receiver. And I think Jaden had a better offensive line, much better, because a couple of those guys, I think maybe first or second round picks next year. But he was doing it in the SEC. You know, Caleb was doing it in some version of like the West Coast version of the Big 12, or what was the Big 12 that like that Patrick Mahomes and Baker played in. And I don't think there's a huge gap to me because of some of the intangibles. I'm a little bit hesitant on. I don't want to say I'm skeptical, but I was just like, I'm a little hesitant on it, just because, again, the defense was bad. The offensive line wasn't good. I get it. They were not going to be a playoff team, but they were, you know, there were games. The Notre Dame game was not a good game for him. It was a big stage game on it, you know, like against their biggest rival. And, you know, he got a few times by Al Golden, the defensive coordinator, and Marcus Freeman. And I don't know. I just felt like when things didn't go right, they just kind of like, it's asking a lot of a quarterback to kind of be the face of a program and then also, you know, kind of be the savior where everything is going that way. And for whatever reason, that just, you know, that part I think was like, you know, if he could have come out after 2 years, I think there were probably would have been more resounding, oh yeah, I'm totally sold that he's going to light up the NFL this year, because of, it just felt like the NIL stuff got a little more fragmented or frayed. And I just felt like there was a little more drama around there. The team wasn't as good. And maybe that exposed a little more stuff about like, okay, how is this going to be in terms of like, you know, is he going to be the guy that's going to lead the franchise to a Super Bowl?
But you still like his selection though, right? Like
can't take him is how I looked at it. I just didn't think you could take, like, cause there's definitely stuff you can ding Jaden on. I don't think anybody looked at Jaden as the first or second pick of the draft 4 months ago, you know, but credit to him, he really blossomed as a passer. And he played very well in big games. But again, quarterbacks, like so many of them, it's a crazy percentage that the NFL misses this much on top quarterbacks. And I know there's more than one thing that goes into it, but it's such an intangibles position that, you know, look, I get why the Bears bombed with Trubisky. That was like, you know, it's easy to say this now. Justin Fields, maybe in the perfect environment, could be a real problem for the NFL defenses and everything like that. It's also like they pulled the plug very, you know, it's not like his career is over, but it's just hard because I think when they look at the evaluation, they get caught up in the great stuff and why they think it can be great. And it's sometimes the other stuff that ends up tripping up the guy, whether it's how they respond to adversity, you know, their work ethic. I mean, there are guys that I thought were close to can't misses over the last 20 years. And then you find out the reason why they actually didn't work out great in the NFL a handful of times, just because they did not have the commitment to grind and do the stuff that really it takes, you know, like, because there's Patrick Mahomes talent, there's Josh Allen talent, but then there's a lot of other guys where it's like you're in that range of you can be a very good quarterback, but you have to, you know, you have to be on top of everything. And there's a lot of guys who I think get by in college just by being that much more talented, or the talent around them or the system around them. And I think that masks a lot of stuff for the NFL.
So before I let you go, this is my last question, and let me just read you a line from your draft confidential, just to see if, or no, it wasn't your draft confidential. It was your analysis after the fact.
Okay.
Hoping you could elaborate on it. Based on what I've seen and heard from folks I trust, I wouldn't bet against Williams.
Yeah, I think it's because he can do a lot of spectacular things. I think it's also because he is very intelligent. I think what would be huge for them is just the football now being the thing. And because you talk to enough people around there, and I live out there, there's a little bit of the vibe that there was like too much about like what he's wearing. And there was a lot of peripheral stuff And it's not to say he'd be the first quarterback who like, or first NFL star, but certainly that position is different than, you know, whatever position that he was, seemed to be very calculated in this and that. And you know, those are the things you kind of like, okay, is that a tell? Is that something? But the other things where I think if it's just like, hey, do you want to be great? Do you really want to be great? It wasn't about being the first pick in the draft. I mean, that's congratulations. That's a great honor, but it's like, this, now it starts. That was, you know, that was a small step to the big step. And from what I've heard from people, they're like, no, he's got that in him. But, you know, we need to see that from the guy who jumped in the, you know, in the co-pilot's chair with Lincoln Riley and almost made it to the playoff the first year, right? Like, if he doesn't, like, pull his hamstring on a run against Utah, they probably make the playoff. So based off of that part, and like I said, a lot off the first year and the first impression, he makes good in first impressions. I think he has a good chance. And I also think because they stepped up and they surrounded him with three great receivers. Like, I think Rome's going to be a great NFL receiver. I think Keenan is, as you know, he's as good a route runner as the NFL's had in a while. And he's a big guy. And then you have another guy who's really dynamic with the ball in his hands. Like, the Bears have given Caleb the keys to, like, I mean, you know this, obviously. So it's like,
yep,
that stuff makes me think it will work. It's just, I could see him putting up huge numbers, but maybe, you know, it's another story. You're going to have to probably beat Patrick Mahomes in the Super Bowl. You're going to have to, you know, like, and I don't, you know, that's a good problem to have if you're talking about them as a legit playoff team. Cause obviously the quarterbacks they've had the last couple of times, well, whatever, you know, Cade McNown and Grossman and, you know, the four, they weren't of that ilk. This guy at least is of it. It's just, we're going to find out a lot more about him because I don't think any of us know. None of us know. You know, I don't even think Lincoln Riley knows. You know, like, you know, he may say, but until we find out what it's like in the NFL and how he responds to it, nobody knows. I think even the guys, the QB collective guys who met him when he was 16, 17 and kept in touch, you know, whatever, and they know the NFL world, you just don't know because it's like, you know, he's not in that bubble and he's not getting pounded. And he's in a major media market and he's in a town where the first round quarterbacks have all floundered, you know? So, and he hasn't
lost to the Packers yet.
Yeah. And he's in a good division, by the way. He hasn't played in really crappy weather either.
So I've covered the team, just going off what you said about like the situation, I've covered the team since Lovie Smith. And like, this to me rivals what Jay Cutler had in 2013 with Brandon Marshall, Alshon Jeffrey, Martellus Bennett, Matt Forte, and then I just look back and how that good situation imploded for a lot of reasons. They had the worst defense in Chicago Bears history that year, but just in terms of talent on paper, it's the best I've seen in a long time. So, Bruce, I can't thank you enough. I've been a big fan of yours forever. Hoka Johns reads you, listens to you as well. If you're listening right now or watching on YouTube, if you're not, follow Bruce on Twitter at Bruce Feldman, CFB. College football extraordinaire for The Athletic. And watch him on Fox.
Thanks, Adam. I can't wait to see how this plays out. I'm so fascinated by what's going on with the Bears right now. So,
yeah.
Should
be fun to cover. Another new era of quarterbacks here for us to see.
And then some.
Yes. Thanks, Bruce.
Thanks, Adam.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, let's keep this college conversation going. Scott Docterman, friend of the show, Iowa expert extraordinaire, college football reporter for The Athletic. What is going on, Scott? And Bears fan. Scott, how are you?
I'm doing well, and it was a very entertaining weekend to watch this and to grade this for The Athletic.
You gave Karan Amagaji a C-.
I'm sure I'm going to hear some heat. I had some heat last year, too.
You didn't expect that to be the first question. I'm sorry.
No, I didn't. I'm messing
with you.
Yeah, you know how that goes. It's kind of heat of the moment. But I guess at that point, I thought more developmental tackle at that stage when they didn't have a second-round pick. I thought, that's probably – but I'll tell you what, for their fourth and fifth rounders, I would have gave them really high marks.
Yeah. So who so you're watching the picks come off the board. Like, I'm curious, you track the Bears. You follow the Bears. College football is your business. Like, what did you want the Bears to do with the third-round pick? Like, I thought offensive tackle was a real option. I knew they had Karan in for an official visit, so I knew it was a possibility you're getting in that range. But for me, I'm thinking, like, where's the pass rusher? Where's the three technique? So what were you thinking in that situation?
That's what I was thinking at that point, and especially looking at the draft. I certainly did not expect them to trade into the fifth round to get Austin Booker. But Austin Booker was somebody that I thought, in the third round, if he would have gone there, that's an easy B for me, because he's got incredible upside athletically. And he was a kind of a one-year wonder at Kansas because he didn't do anything at Minnesota, and they really could have used him to do something there. But he would have been the third rounder that I probably would have gotten excited about for the Bears. So the fact that they traded back into the draft, even though they gave up a little bit next year for him, I thought was tremendous. I thought at that point, when you're talking about, you know, Braxton Jones and Darnell Wright, and it's like, you know, do you not believe in Braxton Jones, and that's your only day two pick. It seemed more developmental. They could fool me, of course, you know, and end up being, he could end up starting for him in a year or two. But I just felt like a pass rusher was more what I thought would have been the better pick.
So you're at Iowa and you're watching the greatest punter of all time. Like, tell me about his story, you covering him. And then, like, well, how about this? What's the furthest or farthest punt you've seen from him? Maybe it's in practice. Maybe it's him messing around. Like, when did you know, like, this kid's for real?
It probably wasn't the actual boots. It was maybe in practice the second year, because the first year was COVID. And he kept – it was, I think it was in spring football, windy day. And everyone he'd hit would hit inside the five and either stick, like, you know, like he hit a nice golf shot, or it would move laterally instead of, you know, instead of into the end zone. And there was probably 10 punts and 8 or 9 of them went that way. And I'm like, wow, this guy is amazing. Just with what he's able to do and the directional punting that he's able to accomplish. And he's got a really cool story, Adam, because he was 22 when he came to the United States. He just got out of college or got out of high school or whatever they do in Australia and wasn't sure what exactly he was wanting to do. And then, you know, he started, you know, was like, well, I kind of like kicking balls around, and played some Australian rules football, and then decided to go to this pro kick academy down there. And right before COVID, so like in that December, January area, LeVar Woods took a trip to Australia to meet him and to go through everything. They signed him. And then COVID hit. So he was stuck in Australia. He ended up happening before he came to the United States that summer. He ended up having to go to Sydney to quarantine. He's from Melbourne, and then came to the United States. Then he had to come to Iowa City and quarantine again in a hotel room before he could join his teammates for spring or for fall camp. And then he was the best punter in the Big Ten his first year. And he never even seen a football game in person. And his first game's at Purdue in front of nobody. And, you know, and during that COVID year, and, you know, he made a couple of mistakes. He didn't know, like, there was one time there was a bad snap and the ball's on the ground and he kicked it like a, you know, soccer ball. And they didn't realize he couldn't do that, but he quickly learned. And I tell you what, you know, the stats are just astounding, Adam. I mean, you know, in of his 295 punts, which I'm surprised his leg's still there. He's 26 now. 127 landed inside the 20-yard line. That's 43%. And it goes on from there. Like last year, I tracked kind of not only 20-yard line, because that's kind of arbitrary to me, but, you know, because 32 punts went inside the 20. But 23 were inside the 13. So you're talking about forcing offenses, the opposing offense, to come up with an extra first down just to try to score. And that's on top of 40 punts of 50-plus yards. And then, of course, he set the NCAA record for most punting yards in a season, which doesn't speak well to Iowa's offense. Of
is that a good thing or a bad thing?
You know, 4,479 yards. Jesus. And it was broken from a 1938 record. So, yeah, he's but also his average. I mean, when you're punting that much and your average is 46.3, which is the most for anybody who had more than 250 punts in a season, it shows that he's able to be proficient, to strike where he needs to go, directional in bad weather. You know, he's in the Midwest, and then to be able to do it over and over and over again. And then when he got into like warm weather, he was terrific. One of his best games was in the Citrus Bowl last year.
Matt Eberflus called him a weapon for the entire team. And I'm sure they're envisioning, you know, punts inside the five and the defense having that advantage. And, you know, like you said, you know, more first downs to gain. Obviously that favors the defense. What, like, there was a celebrity attached to him in a sense. Like, how did you see him handle that? I don't know why I'm thinking of it. Like, I remember covering the Pat O'Donnell mega punt training camp in Bourbonnais. I don't know if you recall this, where every time he took the field, like, fans were going crazy. What was it like covering the celebrity of Torrey Taylor? And I guess, like, how did he handle that type of spotlight? I mean, he's a punter taken in the fourth round.
It's almost like how I would kind of compare this to is like when Kerry Wood would take the mound for the Cubs, you know, back in the early 2000s. And he was so electrifying that, you know, usually with a pitcher, you just kind of, yeah, if he strikes somebody out, you get excited. But it was like, you know, he's going out. That's kind of the way it was with Torrey Taylor, that, like, this year, the first time he punted, I mean, Iowa surprisingly scored 2 touchdowns, I think, on their first 2 possessions. And then, you know, score like 20 more the rest of the year. But after that, but he went out there the first time, he got a standing ovation. He got the loudest cheers on senior day this year. And part of this is he, in my eyes, he directly won four games for Iowa, and they were major games. They were not just like, you know, I mean, in 2021, when Iowa was in a 3-4 game against Penn State at Kinnick Stadium, six of his nine punts landed inside the 20, including the one, the two twice, the three, the eight, and the 12. And then later on, well, actually a couple weeks before that against Iowa State, which was the biggest Cy-Hawk game on record, 10-9, he averaged 51 yards a punt, and he parked five inside the 20, the six, the nine, the 10, the 13, and the 20. And then the next year, this is probably his most infamous game, into the 2022 season opener against South Dakota State. He had 10 punts, 20 were inside, or seven were inside the 20, and two of them went inside the 8-yard line, and both led to safeties, and they won 7-3. And that's where the weapon part of it that Matt Eberflus talked about, and I've seen it up close, because when you have a good defense, and I think the Bears are well on their way to having one, especially after the Montez Sweat trade, is that you back somebody up into the 5-yard line, they think conservatively. They think don't lose the ball. Well, so often that happened last year against Wisconsin, for instance. You know, he averaged 50 yards a punt on 10 punts, and five of them went over 50 yards, and six were inside the 20. Wisconsin didn't have a chance against that defense, Iowa's defense. So they were able to use that. And the other thing is, I think when you look at Iowa's or with Chicago's offense now with a rookie quarterback and an explosive group of wide receivers, that it's to go ahead and it's like 3rd and 10 at your own 25. Go ahead and throw the ball. We got a punter who can flip the field. We got somebody who can angle it. If it's windy, it doesn't matter because he's done this before. If it's cold, it doesn't matter because he's punted in sub-zero at Minnesota and in Iowa. And in the snow, and then in the heat when it's in the, you know, in these different types of things. And then if you're at the plus 50 and you've got a 3-point lead at Lambeau Field and it's 17-14 with 2.5 minutes to go and it's 4th and 1 and you're at the 44 and you're like, you know what? He doesn't have as big of an ego to say, I need to get my average up. He's like, I'm going to ding it inside the 5. That's a weapon for your defense and for your head coach. So he's capable of doing that, which is be aggressive on offense, flip the field, or, hey, we're going to make them go 95 on us with 2 minutes to go to beat us.
Have you ever seen him kick with his left leg? He said he could do it.
I think so. He is ambidextrous. And, you know, he's done some rugby-style punts. I want to say he tried it once, but, you know, one time he tried a fake punt at Ohio State, and that didn't end well. I mean, he just saw, like, nobody was there, and then he realized – you know, he's not slow, but, you know, there's just pretty good defenders on there. So I would probably caution him against that. But I haven't seen him kick with the left. I maybe he did, but it might have happened once.
What does the Bears fan inside you think of the Bears draft? And then what does the college football expert reporter think of the Bears draft?
It's just seemed, I'll say the first part. It just seems like such an un-Bears draft. And part of that is, you know, watching this team since 1980. The first game I ever watched was Chester Markle returning the I was in first grade watching him return the field goal for the Packers against the Bears in overtime. You know, and watching this team before, they've always leaned towards the conservative, well, apprehensive, risk averse, which would have been sticking with Justin Fields. And actually, if the Bears had, say, the third pick instead of the first, I wouldn't have had a problem with them sticking with that.
I'd probably be covering a quarterback competition, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Again.
Right, exactly. But the number one pick in Caleb Williams, he's a game changer. He's, you know, I don't want to go as far as Patrick Mahomes. I'm not going to get into that hyperbole now, but he's a difference maker. He's somebody that I think can change games and the Bears have always, you know, they've had, I seriously, during COVID, I went through all this stuff because I was bored. They've had one quarterback start a Pro Bowl. And that was Sid Luckman after the 1941 season. You know, you got to go back to, you got Trubisky was an alternate that made it. McMahon in 85. Billy Wade in 63. And then Ed Brown sometime in the 50s. So they don't even have a legitimate Pro Bowl quarterback, you know, other than McMahon being hung over out in Hawaii and after the 1985 Super Bowl. So I'm excited. And I didn't think that at nine they would take a Dunze. I thought, well, a Bears pick would be either A, trade down, or B, go with the best offensive lineman and, you know, kind of go from there. No, they're putting the pedal to the metal. And then, you know, as I said, you know, with Torrey in the fourth round, normally I'd look at a punter if his name wasn't Torrey Taylor. But knowing what he's capable of doing, it's an amazing pick. And then finally, coming back to get your pass rusher, that's a risk. That's like a Brad Holmes type of a choice. That wasn't something I saw out of Ryan Poles. And I was like, wow, this is something different from them. And I think he's got the capability to be, I don't want to go Leonard Floyd, but you know, he's got that potential. He's a really incredible athlete. And if he can, if Booker can be a rotational guy, maybe for a year or two, I think he's got the potential to be a difference maker. And then on the college side of things, evaluating this, you know, with Caleb Williams, you wonder what's he going to be like when times get tough, you know, I mean, to be a true evaluator, as you, I think you mentioned with Bruce, Lambeau Field, you know, what's he going to be like when he loses to the Packers and maybe plays poorly, maybe throws a couple interceptions and he comes back and everybody's on him. You know, what are they going to do? What's he going to do then? How is he going to react? How are his teammates going to react? Is there anybody there that can get in his face and say, look, we need you to be better? And are they capable of that? Is the coach capable of that? Because Eberflus, you know, at the beginning of last year, I thought he was dead coach walking. And then he came back and, you know, really put some nice wins together. And I think Adunze will be terrific. I think that's his, you know, you've got a true X. You got a great slot receiver in Keenan Allen if he's healthy, and then you've got a Z, you know, in DJ Moore that I think is, I mean, that trio is as good as I've ever seen from the Bears. So overall, I thought it was a really good draft for the Bears, objectively and subjectively.
The unbelievability part of like the draft, like the, I forget like the Falcons part because I talked about it with Bruce a little bit, but like and we knew they liked the Dunze, but like you know, if these receivers are that good, maybe he's off the board. Like you know, they're doing work on the defensive lineman and the offensive lineman. It just makes sense like at nine. But then I'm just trying to embolden your point here a little bit, because like once nine hit and a Dunze is there, I remember sitting next to Kevin Fishbane, like, they're going to take him. Like, they're going to take the receiver over everything we just covered because, well, one, he's available. Didn't think that. Their own simulation said it was 50-50. And then, like, this is a different way of operating in a sense. But if you're taking a quarterback, you got to find help for him. So, yeah, I'm with you on the unbelievability of this in a sense, covering so many – like Bears drafts where, you know, they're talking about Jay McClellan. And you know, even to your point about Leonard Floyd, I thought Leonard Floyd turned out to be like a really good pick. If like Austin Booker becomes Leonard Floyd, like that's a home run pick in my opinion. That selection would be, especially in the fifth round. But I'm with you. It's, I don't want to say there's some shock to it, but the Bears do seem to be functioning differently now under Ryan Poles.
It's like, as a fan, and I'm sure most fans thought this way, is go get, you know, it's exciting when you get a receiver, when you get a skill position player. It's like, wow, we got a quarterback who's the best quarterback, the one that everybody thought we should get. And it's like the skeptic inside of you always thinks they're not going to get the guy I want. Well, they did. He was there, and they didn't bypass him. They didn't trade him. They didn't trade the pick. He was available, and they took him. And you're like surprised that they actually took that guy and got that guy. So that's what makes this so fascinating. And as we know, and you know, from watching it, covering it, or whatever, the Bears have never had that kind of an explosive offense. I mean, like I remember Eric Kramer, you know, in 1995, kind of being explosive a little bit, or Gary Croton's teams with Marty Booker and, you know, DeMarcus Robinson, you know, just those kinds of guys. And now here we are, you know, Bernard Berrien back in with, and then the quarterbacks that they've taken, they've all been risky, you know, Trubisky moving up a spot for him. And it was, it kind of felt like a little bit like Drake May, not because they went to the same school, but just because unproven 1 year starter, and it turned out not to work. And Rex Grossman was what, the fourth quarterback taken. And those are always, I don't know what the percentages are. I think in the first round, we can see that it's a true bell curve between A's and F's. And there's a lot more D's and F's than there are A's and B's. But out of the fourth quarterback taken always seems to be the one that never seems to work out. And Cade McNown was the worst one of all. But this one, to me, is different. He was the number one quarterback. It wasn't like, well, we took Penix at 9. It was, you took number one. And so now they have a cast around him, which they didn't necessarily. I thought Fields was a good pick. I still do. I'll go to my grave on that one. But not with Trubisky. They just didn't have the surroundings. They didn't allow him to succeed. And so now I think with Caleb Williams that they have a cast of characters. Now he can go out and do his thing. And my guess, my prediction is he's going to win a couple of games that people are going to be really excited about. And he's going to have a couple of really bad games and probably against a rival or two.
And that's okay. Like, yeah, that should be part of the expectation. Those are realistic expectations. So like, if you had to critique the Bears situation, where would you start? Like, if you had to look at it with the most critical eye. So I'll go through it. You got Odunze, you got Keenan Allen, DJ Moore, Cole Kmet, Gerald Everett, DeAndre Swift back there with Roschon Johnson. You have an offensive line of Braxton Jones, Tevin Jenkins, Ryan Bates, Nate Davis, Darnell Wright, good-looking offense, Shane Waldron, Thomas Brown. You have Kerry Joseph. You have Ryan Griffin as an assistant QB's coach. He brings some experience. He's supposed to be that veteran quarterback who just happens to be a coach now. Does that make sense? And then then you have Flus, which he's a defensive minded head coach. The defense, he's got his new look, so that's got to be part of it too.
Yeah.
The defense top five in a lot of categories over the second half of the season. Like, it all looks good. A lot of it looks good, but if you had to critique it, be critical of it, where would you start?
I'm probably more skeptical than critical of them right now, because you wonder, was that just a late season surge against a lot of so-so teams other than the Lions that allowed them to be successful late in the year? I do love Montez Sweat. I thought that was a brilliant trade, as much as the Chase Claypool trade was a disaster the year before. I think this was equally or in the opposite direction, 180. I look at maybe this, you know, Shane Waldron is a little bit of a question because, you know, out of Seattle, you know, there were, you know, but I don't think he got a ringing endorsement from, you know, Jackson Smith and Jigba, for instance. They were so-so. I thought he did a nice job with Geno Smith, but, you know, he's still kind of a marginal quarterback. So I guess I'm a little bit, I question that a little bit, but overall, I like the way they've built this team. You know, they a couple of years ago, it was defensive backs. Last year, I was critical or questioning the going into the free agency with all that money and then plucking a couple of linebackers. And will that pay off rather than, say, a Javon Hargrave or somebody like that? Now, overall, I want to see either an edge. And then last year, I was most critical when they picked Darnell Wright over Carter at defensive tackle. I want to see, can they develop or can they bring in somebody else on the defensive line? That's probably where I would start. And then can Eberflus be the head coach and can the defense still thrive? Because I think he's proven his chops as a defensive coordinator, but can he be a head coach? And when the games get close, and I think this team's going to be very competitive for a playoff spot, can he go and beat Detroit, Green Bay, another team when it really matters?
Yeah, to your point, there seems to be a lot of unfair expectations being put on, like Jervon Dexter this year to take a next step in his career. I know he was a second-round pick. He's got a lot of high-end traits. Seems to have all the work ethic things that you want. It fits that hits philosophy that Eberflus has. But we'll see. The Bears didn't sign a replacement for Justin Jones. We got a big deal in free agency with the Cardinals, if I remember correctly. But yeah, up front, pass rush. As good as that defense was last year, Scott, I've brought it up 1,000 times, I feel like, in the show. Still had one of the worst pass rush rates, the worst pass rush rate in the entire NFL.
Yeah. And that's why getting somebody like Booker, because if they would have gone the entire draft, and of course they only had 4 picks, but if they would have gone the entire draft and didn't get something to infuse the pass rush, I think then you could be really critical. But I think coming up, not as a win is now. I mean, you know, you're giving up a 4th rounder for a 5th rounder. Is that how it turned out?
Yeah.
That's fine. I mean, you know, you're coming into the draft. You're grabbing a guy that most people had as a 3rd round projection that's got a lot of upside. No problem there. And I think now it's a matter of they've got some salary cap space. See what happens with the June 1st cuts. Anybody left that can fill in, if nothing else, be a rotational guy up front, win some pass rush situations, or manufacture it, you know, with a linebacker or something. But otherwise, for the first time in a few years, I feel pretty positive about this team that it's got a chance to be not only competitive, but like when they played the Saints in the playoffs a few years ago, we knew that was a one and done team. There was no chance, but you feel like with this unit, with a quarterback that's capable of doing something, with a defense that's moving in the right direction, that if you get in the playoffs, there's no reason why they can't compete. You know, I mean, you know, I think they're right there.
There seems to be some staying power, or at least that the Bears hope. So, yeah. Scott, thank you so much. If you're watching, listening, please follow Scott on Twitter. That's DOCHTERMAN. Did I get that right?
You did, yes.
Maybe we'll have Kent put that on the screen for YouTube. Covers college football for The Athletic. Does great things on Iowa as well. So be sure to read and follow Scott. Thank you, Scott. Good catching up.
Thanks, Adam. Yep.
All right, that's a wrap on another Adam Johns special with special guests. Thank you to Bruce and Scott for joining the show. I hope you enjoyed their wonderful insight. Follow them on Twitter. Check out their awesome stuff on The Athletic. Just two great college football reporters for us. Just so much information, so much detail, so much insight. So be sure to check out Bruce and Scott's stuff. That does it for this show. We'll be back later in this week. I think the Fishman will be joining me to really put a bow on all things draft-related as we get into the off-season program with the Chicago Bears. Adam Hoge will be returning next week. Thank you, as always, for listening. Follow us on Twitter, at Hogan Johns. You know me, at Adam Johns. Find our stuff, our golf shirts, which I'm wearing right now on YouTube. And we got awesome pullovers there as well, on obviousshirts.com. So please check that out. So thanks for listening. We'll be back very, very soon. See ya.
In Chicago, Rome was built in a day.